This is Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Quick announcement before I introduce you to today's guest. So after chatting about stress in the last episode of the podcast, Marie Froelich and I decided to join forces once again and offer a series of three 90-minute webinars starting in mid-January of 2021, each session offering unique and simple ways to manage stress. In the series, I'll be facilitating a different shamanic journey exercise in each session, and Marie will offer simple ways to use food and herbal remedy support to take care of yourself during this challenging time. To learn more or to register for the series, please visit the events page on my website, lucidpathwellness.com. I'll also include a link in the show notes. Today's episode is more like two podcasts in one. In the first half, my guest, Baron Stefan, talks about the book he really didn't want to write, but did, at the urging of the people in his life who witnessed the powerful and impactful way in which he moved through the unexpected loss of his wife, Shauna, who died in a car accident a little over 3 years ago. The book is titled The Final Gift of the Beloved, Her Disappearance, 13 Days. In the second half of our conversation, Baron talks about his passion for sharing simple techniques to help us become the gardeners of our minds through what he calls the yoga of mindset. A little about Baron. He's a longtime student on the spiritual path of Siddha Yoga, a big band crooner, and a widower. He's been a big wave surfer, a 1980s Italian pop singer, and an award-winning elementary school teacher. Baron has now fully transitioned from the elementary school classroom to his company, The Yoga of Mindset, where he teaches adults and children how to use their thoughts so they're not used by them. Please enjoy my conversation with Baron Stefan. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you have a book out. Is this your first book that you've written?
This is my first and probably my only. We'll see.
Yeah. So it's intense, right, to write a book?
It is extremely intense, especially given the, you know, the subject matter in this one, that it's the true story. And it was really an honoring of my wife and my teachers. And I didn't even want to write it. So go figure.
So then why did you end up writing it?
Yeah, I had friends who asked me to try. They had seen that my response to the tragedy was very unexpected and unusual in their eyes. And they said, please help us understand how you were able to respond in that way. And as I started to write it, the more I wrote, the more my love and gratitude to Shauna and my teachers became the fuel to try and understand how even a tragedy could help me understand myself and my purpose for being alive and offer it back to others.
Okay, that was going to be one of my questions because it's a really intense read.
Yeah, it's a really intense 13 days. And, you know, it is the true story of from the moment I hear the officer say she is deceased. It's a moment by moment chronicle of those 13 days. And what was stunning about it, and I think why I was asked to write it, was not just the obvious agony, but the beauty was stunning and alternating almost like a child was playing with a light switch. And to be completely honest, it was and has been the beauty and love that has and had the upper hand. It was very confusing.
I could imagine. Yeah. So that statement you just made was pretty packed with a lot of stuff. So let me see if I can tease some things out because I'd like to dive in a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, so you're saying that you really wrote the book because other people around you saw you going through this grieving experience and wanted to understand how you were able to go through it the way you did?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the book is called, in one sense, the title of the book tells everyone everything they need to know, you know, the final gift of the beloved, her disappearance, 13 days. So it was Shauna's disappearance, which is what I'm calling it in this case, that ripped me open so completely as to be prepared and ready. And also thanks to 25 years of daily practice of my spiritual path of yoga, to receive her gifts. And that wouldn't even have been conceivable, let alone possible, without those 25 years, and that started actually 40 years ago when I met Baba, to make me ready for that. Yeah.
So your spiritual practice, you feel like, really kind of held you up and gave you a container or a foundation to be able to process your grief?
Yeah, that is the central, that and the love that Shauna and I have for each other are the central pillars of this book. That, and it's important to understand that this book is definitely not intended to promote any particular spiritual path. Your approach will look different from mine. But what I hope it will do is my own experience can make it possible for others to consider that it could be possible for them too, that by giving oneself fully to the teachings of their practice, whatever practice that may be, their path, spiritual path, unbelievable possibilities in unthinkable moments become possible. That both the solace as well as mind-blowing realizations of the greater purpose for being alive happened to me. And I simply, I remember one friend in particular saying, you know, please write this so that we can, some of us can see that there's another choice if tragedy strikes unexpectedly and how you got to that point. And so I wrote it, and nothing in it was planned, the 13 days, that it would only be 13 days that I would share in the book, what parts came after what part. It was completely going through it again over a year and a half period right outside on my lanai here in Hawaii. And that was such a great, great gift, unexpected, was to commit to only telling the truth. And if I had any doubts if anything was the truth, I took it out. I wouldn't include it.
Yeah, that is, yeah. That's clearly evident. I mean, the detail, I was really shocked as I was reading as to the seeming, it was as if you were writing it as it was unfolding. Like you were really able to go back in time and capture exactly what was going on in your psyche, in your body, in your heart. And I was kind of like, damn.
It was literally reliving it. And a lot of the things that I put in there, I didn't remember that I would remember. So, you know, who knows, perhaps because of my practice of meditation for so long, perhaps simply because of my deep, deep love and respect for Shauna and our time together, our only 12 years, right? That's as long as we knew each other, allowed me to go back and remember those things. And also, I had 14 journals. So Shauna and I were prolific journal writers. And like that whole scene in the meditation room where we're sitting back to back and I'm once again trying to leave her because of my old, what I grew up with when I was a kid. You know, I had a lot of that is word for word of what I wrote down in the journal, because that was our habit of honoring each other, even in the most difficult moments. And it was things like that that helped me remember what was going through my head and my heart at that time.
Right.
And how close to the edge we were. And it was very important for me to include those flashbacks of when I almost left Shauna, because Shauna is idealized by a large population on the globe. Shauna is known globally. She has a vitae that is pages long. Quick example, Shauna was invited by Jimmy Carter to facilitate at the Carter Center when he invited a group of world leaders, world religious leaders, to discuss why women were being abused. Shauna worked for 5 years with Toast on International, the first organization in the world to go into West Africa and get over 8,000 villages to voluntarily curtail female genital cutting. This was my wife, and this is just the tiniest snapshot of who she was.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I've always felt grateful that she thought I was the right one.
Well, I want to get back to what you had mentioned a little while ago when you were talking about the motivation for writing this book, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. What a powerful message, I think, to face your grief head on. And not only just face it, but dive into it and really experience it. That's the message that I'm getting from you now and also reading your book. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Thank you. Well, yes. And I'll be honest with you. Everyone seems to be getting something different from this book, which is perfect. They're getting what is resonant for them. The diving in, I had no other choice. So for your listeners, Sean and I lived in Vashon, Washington. And so I was in Seattle the day I heard of her death. And Sean had been for weeks back in our old home in Boulder, Colorado, working with the Natural Hazards Institute, which she had worked with when 9/11 happened. They had sent her in to do studies with the emergency responders. So she was just finishing that. She was supposed to come home the next day. I was supposed to pick her up from the airport. And I'm in this meditation intensive all day long, with my practice, Siddha Yoga, and we had rented the Unitarian Church in Seattle for the day. So no one was around but about seven of us. And on the last break of the day, I looked down at my phone and there's a visual voicemail from a police officer on Vashon Island. And I thought, that's odd. Not only have I never received anything from a police officer, but there's only like one or two on the island. So I went out to my car in the break and sat down, gathered myself because I realized something was up. Like already my intuition was kicking in, and I called him. And he asked me a series of questions, starting with, where are you? What are you driving? What are you doing there? All these random questions that I couldn't figure out what he was getting at. And at the end, he finally asked questions of, where's your wife? What is she driving? What's she doing there? And he said, the last thing he said was, okay, I'm going to meet you back at your home on Vashon tonight when you get back, because I would have to take the ferry and all that to get back home, right? And I said, no, officer, if this has anything to do with my wife, you need to tell me right now. And God bless him, the language he used was perfect. He said, yes, it does. Your wife was killed in a car accident this morning. She is deceased. And by using that word deceased, it made it crystal clear. And even though I don't know how long afterwards, I heard a voice, which was my own, say, are you sure? And he said, yes, she is deceased. I went into a completely blank state. And, I've taught elementary school for 18 years, so I know really, really well about the hardwiring of the brain and how neurons fire. And I knew that I had a completely blank mind, one, because that's basically meditation every morning for 25 years in a row for me, right? It's to still the thought waves of the mind. And I knew that he had also asked what Shauna would call, because this was her work, teaching at the University of Boulder, the unaskable question, which is simply that question which, if not asked, threatens the foundation of everything in that area of your life. And I had never asked myself, what would I do if my wife were suddenly gone? And so there was just like, even in the book, I put the complete truth there. After he said that, I was looking out the front windshield because I'm sitting in the driver's seat at the trees in the parking lot around me. And I just watched these like little aerosols drifting through the air and the sun on the trees. I remember all that really vividly. And I don't know how long all that took, but when I got out of the car, Wendy, something had settled in me. Something had like re-landed inside. And I had one single intention, and that was send Shauna as many blessings as soon as possible for as long as possible. That comes from my path of Siddha Yoga, that can be done, that you can send blessings through chanting, prayer, meditation, and all those things I'd done every day for so long. The other thing I had was that Shauna and I came together later in life. We had met 12 years before and fell immediately in love. She was just coming out of a failed marriage. I was a definite bachelor and happy to do it. I was, you know, teaching elementary school, had my big band, all those things. But I feel certain that one thing Shauna and I always did for each other was teach each other how to more deeply trust life as it showed up, because life was the participant along with us, we felt. And so when things would, like, and that's easy, of course, to trust when things occur that you like, that are good for you, that feel uplifting, that feel meaningful, but they're also deceptive. So we trained ourselves also to trust whatever came out of the blue that might also be abhorrent and unlikable. And we helped each other through those times when we couldn't do that, like when something would happen with her job, you know, when she would go to West Africa or, you know, whatever, and she would help me. And so this training, which is also obviously part of a spiritual path, isn't it? Preparing us for those unthinkable moments when to allow ourselves to be our best selves instead of our worst selves. And so all that I put in the book when I got out of the car is really true. I knew something was coming, and I describe it as a massive tidal wave because that's my background in surfing. I know big waves, and that's what it felt like. And I also knew well enough to not let it hit me yet until I was safe back in the cottage where I could receive it and whatever it was bringing. Because I knew in my heart, and I think everyone who deeply loves knows this, everyone who's loved a parent or a child or a partner who is suddenly gone, this had to happen for a reason, even if I don't know the reason. And so in that, I knew there would be a gift if I could not plunge into the abyss. I knew it was possible. And so that's why everything that happened in those 13 days afterwards did, because I had that very strong intention. I mean, even driving home in the car, that was the most intense of all the things. Like, I couldn't even, like, when I first grabbed the wheel to get out of the parking lot, I realized that my fingers weren't connected to my wrists, which weren't connected to my arms. And I was panicked. Like, how the hell am I going to get home at traffic hour across the Seattle freeways and across the ferries? It was so intense.
Yeah, I can't even imagine all the things that were going on inside of you. Like, physiologically, I mean, you're clearly in shock, right? So your consciousness gets altered. Time gets weird. Things you pay attention to, the details you notice, everything gets really, just really messed up. And then there's all these thoughts going through your mind. Well, anybody who's been through a tragic experience like that, or hearing news of a tragic experience, knows what you're talking about, yes. At least to some degree. I mean, it's very intimate, it's very personal for each person, but certainly it's a out of this world kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's so out of your ordinary, everyday mm-hmm. kind of thing. It's not like going to the grocery store, you know?
It is. And I think that's the, you know, that's why, in one sense, that's why I wrote the book, right? To even consider, almost heretical thought, right? That a beloved's final gift could be their death, that they would love us so much. To me, afterwards, it makes perfect sense. In fact, it seems absurd that they wouldn't do that. That the one who loves us the most wouldn't make the final, most devastating occurrence be a blessing, that isn't their intention for us. And so at that point, which to me, it just seems obvious, and I would never, ever blame or judge anyone who responds differently, because it, as you said, it is completely personal. Nevertheless, it seems crystal clear to me that one who loves deeply would want everything to be of benefit, absolutely everything. And that's how I approached it.
So is there a way you can translate that gift as to what it was for you?
Mm-hmm. That what I've been learning over 40 years in Siddha Yoga is true, that nothing is as it seems, that we have all lived many lives, that there is a greater arc and purpose to one's life than just this one life. And only within that context of many lives could a tragedy, such as one's best friend, most loved wife, not be a tragedy, not be a calamity? Only within that context, when there is a greater purpose to what we're supposed to learn and how we're supposed to grow when we're here, that's the only way. It's almost like, what's the purpose of boils and a disease? Right? How could that be good? It's the body healing itself. But the greater thing that I learned is certainly that, and if the best thing is somehow that the body doesn't make it, there's many lives. And it's interesting, Wendy, in that, like, of course, my upbringing with yoga would have taught me that well before, right?
Right.
I would have heard the idea of karma well before. Nevertheless, it is what I've learned is that nothing intellectual matters. No thoughts, no knowledge comes to one's aid in those moments. It is only boots on the ground experience. And that's what this was the opportunity of mine to have or to lose. And so I actually consciously chose to see it as, you know, as I wrote in the book, you know, I was constantly looking for, like, what, why did this happen now? And I would look to my, like, when I went back into the meditation intensive right after I heard from the officer, and I went up to the altar where the, you know, the picture of my teachers were, and just looking into them to, like, help me understand, what is your intention here? What is going on? Help me, give me something in this moment when I'm falling off the edge of the world. And I'll be honest with you, it took me a year and a half to figure out their gift to me. Because even the living lineage teacher, Gurmai Chidvalasananda, who inherited the Siddha lineage from my teacher Baba, when I wrote her, you know, she had someone call me and there was condolences and I even got flowers, but there was no word from her. I very specifically asked that correspondence person, does Gurmai have any words for me? Because I know from my practice the power of a realized being and their words. And it took me a year and a half. Like I told her, I said, you know, when your correspondence person called me and he said you had no words for me, I cried and I cried. But then I understood.
Was it intentional?
I understood. And my answer was, yes, I want what you want for me, which is to understand that nothing out there is ever going to help me, that everything, like, this is Siddha Yoga. Like, it points back to the inner self over and over again. That's Baba's message. Love yourself. Honor yourself. God dwells within you as you. And this was her really difficult but beautiful way of forcing me to look to myself in that moment when I thought I needed her the most. Mm-hmm. Again, that was the other huge gift of this. And it's only the experience of it that has given me something that I think will always be with me. Because as an elementary school teacher, I know if you go in and you rescue the child too soon, you give them the answer too soon, they've missed that opportunity. They will have to learn that again.
Exactly. I'm a shamanic practitioner, and the foundation of my practice is in Hawaiian and Polynesian shamanism. Mm, and Makua, the elder from the Big Island, I don't know if you ever heard of Makua. He was like the Dalai Lama of Polynesia. He would talk about the bowl of silence and that the importance of the teacher to sit in the bowl of silence so that, just what you're talking about, so that the student can learn on their own without being fed the information, which wouldn't really have the same impact, right? Unless you're going through it yourself and striving to reach those answers on your own.
And that is such a core teaching. Like that is in everything I see in the world nowadays, of those of us who are learning and those of us who are really struggling and creating realities that frighten us, is this either the acceptance of what you just said or the running away from it, which is totally natural, but running eventually brings great suffering, and great suffering brings us right back to that bowl you just talked about.
What's the significance of 13 days?
So in the East, and I think it's in Hinduism, I don't know, because Siddha Yoga is, I want to be clear, Siddha Yoga is not a religion. There's people from every different faith in Siddha Yoga. It's a philosophy. But in the East, when I had been in the ashram, I had been have been going to one of the ashrams of Siddha Yoga in upstate New York for a number of years in summer to offer my service there. And my service would be helping children, like teaching children while their parents go and meditate or go to chanting or teaching sessions. And what I, just 2 months before Shauna died, I had been in the ashram and I met with a woman whose role it had been for a number of years was to help people know how to send blessings when someone you love dies. Because my mom was at a certain age. And so I asked to meet with her because I thought, oh, you know, mom may be going soon. Let me learn more deeply what to do. And so she told me of the concept of the 13 days in that moment. And then my conversation on the second day with one of the monks of Siddha Yoga, he reminded me of the 13 days. And the significance is very simply this, that you thank and honor and talk to and celebrate and speak to the one who has departed for 12 days. And on that 13th day, in a sense, you release them. You encourage them to go into the light. You say, I'll be fine without you, because your work will carry on, whatever it was dear to that person, because what you don't want them to do is hold on to anything that would keep them bound to this physical world. That's not what's next for them. And so it both honors one's own grieving process, because some people don't grieve at all. They stuff it down and they don't experience it till years later or whatever that may be. So, you know, for me, what it did was it gave that container, like you just described, that might be strong enough to hold what I was going through, the intense lows and the even more intense highs, as you know from the book. And then on that 13th day to release her, which is important globally, it turns out. Like I knew Shauna was known globally and important, but I had no idea. Like the social media literally blew up with people coming out of the woodwork from all over the world of saying how Shauna, so many people, it was crazy. So many people said that their breakthrough moment in life came from a moment with Shauna. This is the impact she had on people. It was just natural to her, and this was her intention, was to be of benefit to the world and to the creatures. She was a very powerful environmentalist, very powerful in the world of sustainability and leadership. So shortly, within a few days, I shared online with all those people was the concept of 13 days, so that both they could have this closure with Shauna and the gift of being torn open by losing someone you thought would be here for another 40 years, as many of them described, as well as I wanted their power too. Like, let's all send Shauna into the light on that 13th day and tell her, we'll be fine, source, beloved, go, we thank you. And it turned into that. Like hundreds of people, I had no idea, I didn't even know. Like, I always knew that Shauna was important globally. But in that moment, reading their testimonials, I was in tears and I didn't even know these people, because what they wrote was so beautiful about their relationships with Shauna. Like the woman that I describe in the book, one of Shauna's former students who went on a hike with Shauna after they were, you know, she had graduated years before and was a professional self. And they hike up this mountain, the girl shares with her at the top of the mountain that the job she's in is like literally sucking her soul and very dark. And Shauna, the girl says in her post, right, her share of Shauna tribute, that Shauna she refused to walk down the mountain with her until the woman vowed to call that job person right away and quit.
Damn.
She refused. Because Shauna, and literally she quoted Shauna said, and Shauna said this to many people, I've heard her, because you cannot stay with something that is so significantly life-taking.
Life's too short.
Life is a precious gift, a I don't know in your tradition, but in the East and in Siddha Yoga, we understand that there is something about a human life that is so rare and unique that only in a human life can one realize one's divinity. So let's not waste it.
No, it is a gift. Absolutely. It's hard to imagine that when life is really sucking for you, but it is.
Yeah, that's 100% true, Wendy. And that's why some kind of practice consistently maintained, and that's the key, is consistent. Don't ever give it up. Keep moving forward. It's so crucial. It's so critical to have.
Shauna sounds like she was an amazing woman.
Yep. A beauty inside and out.
Yeah. How long ago did she die?
Almost just a few weeks past 3 years.
Okay, so it hasn't been that long. So you really got to writing not too long after she died, huh?
About a year.
Okay.
Yeah, about 1 year afterwards.
It sounds like you've been through some changes too since mm-hmm. she's died, career-wise. At least I saw that in the little bio mm-hmm. I was given. You're no longer teaching elementary school.
No.
What are you doing now?
So now I guess you could call me semi-retired. I teach in a different way. So on one of my websites, The Yoga of Mindset, I make available what's been available to me for so many years. So since about 1994 or 5, within Siddha Yoga, there was something called the Correspondence Course, which was you'd get two lessons a month and you'd reread them over and over. And I stayed with that and have been reading those lessons every day, basically since then. And what they do is simply they replace the tapes in your mind with truth, you know, something that's true. And, you know, I don't think there's anything more significant than that we all come to understand what's at the basis of all of this, which is simply that the most basic way that life works is that whatever thought we're thinking in each moment is what we are experiencing in that moment. And then the next thought comes along and we will experience whatever that thought is describing to us. There is something in us that always believes its thoughts. It doesn't have the capacity to think, that's not true what I'm thinking. And having done this with students for so long, and obviously done this with myself day after day for so many years, it's the way the mind and ego work together. We always believe whatever we're thinking. However we describe a situation to us, whether it's true or not, is what we experience is true. And so it is literally, this is to me, the core of yoga. So in the West, we think of yoga as twisting bodies. But yoga for thousands of years has been nothing but the scientific study of the human mind. That's what yoga has always done. Hatha yoga prepares to still the body so that it doesn't bother us when we're trying to still our thought waves, etc. And so everyone knows this in one sense. Like it'd be hard-pressed to come across, at least I think anywhere, someone who didn't know the idea of think positive thoughts and you'll have a positive life, right?
Right.
The idea of affirmations. Yet why are so many people unsuccessful and give it up? Simply because it's so damn hard. Why? Because the average human being has 60,000 thoughts a day. Now, how many can you remember from yesterday or last Thursday? Precious few, right? Yep, me too. What that simply says to me is, if we don't know something exists, how can we possibly know how it's impacting us? So as an elementary school teacher for 18 years, I watched self-esteem plummet in children by this power of them believing their thoughts. I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm unpopular, I failed the test. So I just wanted to make available to people online. And so I wrote 3 months of lessons, just like I've been receiving, but you know, basically what I think 3 months would give to people of how to grasp this idea that whatever thought I'm thinking determines my experience, like how I'm feeling. And so I just made it all free online. I recorded it just like I record it, because I listen to my lessons when I run, when I drive, when I go anywhere. And I'll be honest, Wendy, I can't think of anything more important for anyone than to understand this and then to practice it every day. And I say that because I still read my lessons every day because I need it. The mind, it doesn't stop. Even though I meditate every day for an hour and I'm really good, I can stop my mind from thinking for, you know, a full minute at a time. But even after 25 years of daily yoga and 40 years since I met my teacher and received Shaktipat, the mind is relentless. It is the nature of the mind to think one thought after another. And it is our nature to believe whatever that thought is. And so our mind, what I discovered in children is our, by teaching them, you know, being basically a third, fourth, and fifth grader, is that their minds, just like mine, coincidentally, and their parents, doesn't like shield out the negative thoughts and only keep the good thoughts. It keeps all the thoughts.
Yes, it does.
It's our mind is like a garden. It plants all the thoughts. And so if we hear often enough, you're a failure, you're ugly, we look for evidence in the world that proves that. That's what we look for. It's called hardwiring, right? Mm-hmm. Western medicine has finally caught up to yoga. And so how I would teach children, because this stuff is really slippery and we get so distracted so easily. I've got to go to the market. I've got to get that job. And we forget the most basic way that life works, which is that our thoughts are creative and powerful. They create our experience, and we forget that simply because it's so hard to hold on to. And so one way I would teach my students this was we had something called growth mindset, which is a theory by Dr. Carol Dweck that came out in 2008. She wrote a book called Mindset and was embraced by the educational world. So the idea of mindset and mindfulness were tools I could use to help them understand that their thoughts were determining what they were feeling, not Joey over there and not Jenny down there talking about them, that they had more control of this than they thought. And so before each test, I would have them get out a sticky note and make a T-chart. And on one side, they'd put GM for growth mindset thoughts. And on the other side, they'd write FM for fixed mindset thoughts. A growth mindset thought might be like, I can do this. You know, I'm going to do the best I can. And I've been studying. I can do better at this. A fixed mindset thought is simply like, my intelligence is fixed. I can't get any smarter. And so before each test, I would have them spend 5 minutes and write their growth mindset thoughts and their fixed mindset thoughts. And because we had a community that I created of trust, and we're all in this together, Mr. Stefan, that's me for your listeners, he's got a lot of this stuff too. And I would share regularly. We just had this community of trust where risk-taking was okay, because that was the point of being together, was to support each other through this, to take these risks that would make our lives better together. And so before tests, they would write these thoughts down. Well, because of this community, they also trusted me. And so I would go around and I would say to people, would it be okay if I would share those things you wrote on the sticky note with everyone in the class before the test? And eventually I would always find someone. And I remember to this day, the boy who was the first one to do this for me. And so he said, yes, you can read my thoughts out loud. And so I went to his ear, you know, he's facing this way. And I went to his ear and pretended to whisper in his ear what his thoughts were, but loud enough for everyone in the classroom to hear. And so I read, when I got to his fixed mindset thoughts, they were, you're horrible at this. You're gonna fail. And I looked around at everyone in the class and I said, what would you say to someone who came up to you and said that to you before a test? And, you know, fourth and fifth graders are super down to earth. They all said immediately, I tell them to get the heck out of here. And yet, what we don't understand is that this is the most basic way that life works. And we're unaware of it simply because 60,000 comes so fast. And the next one, we can't even space between each one, right? We can't even find space between each one, let alone catch them and say, no, not that. And so this is what, to me, is the essence of yoga and the essence of those lessons. Long answer to your question of what can people get on my website. They'll get this. They'll get the first two tools that I use every day. Delete and get it in the bud. Timing matters, which simply means when a thought comes up that I don't want, that is self-defeating, critical of others, I say delete in my head, just like a phone message. And if it comes up again, I say delete again. And in this way, I become the gardener of my mind every day. And the idea of getting the thought in the bud is how I would show it to children, as I'd show them a picture of a small bud on the ground, a little green shoot. And I would say, how hard is it for you to uproot that, get it roots and all? And they'd say, super easy, Mr. Stephan, we can do that. And we'd go out in the garden and do it at our school. And then I'd show them a picture of a bush, and I'd say, how hard would it for you to get that out? And they'd say, well, that would be a bit harder for sure. And then I'd show a picture of a tree and then a forest. And this is the idea of getting thoughts in the bud. Timing matters. It is actually very easy for me to say delete to a thought that is negative about my life, or about, even if I hear myself say, like, I hate this, or I'm feeling terrible, I just delete that thought immediately. Because it will grow, and there is a part of me that, even though I know it's a, like, I don't usually think those thoughts, if you let those thoughts happen often enough, we believe them to be true. And they determine our reality. And because of what science tells us about hardwiring the neurons of our brain and how they hardwire the paths that we use the most, so naturally, when anything comes up, we're going to think that thought before we think the other kinds of thoughts, because we're used to it. It's because we never got it in the bud.
The world is what you think it is.
Yeah, right. And see, so everyone knows that, isn't it? You get what you focus on, right? All this stuff has been around forever, but why don't people use it? Because it is very, very hard, and the work never ends.
Oh, it's a discipline.
It's a discipline. Well said.
Nobody likes that word, right?
No, you're right. Nobody likes that word, discipline, but it's self-discipline. And you know, one of the things, so I'm going to wade into some waters here and say that, you know, the people who lose their temper easy, who beat up on wives and husbands and children and all that stuff and fly into rage, their biggest fear is being controlled, being dominated, right? You can't make me wear a mask. You can't make me do all these things. What they don't understand, and this is the essence of yoga, is that they are literally being controlled by the hardwired patterns in their brain that they grew up with, that tell them what to do and how to react. And that's what dominates them, not the outside thing. The most ingrained habit of the ego is to blame the outside world for what it is feeling. And it is this absolute getting rid of responsibility for what we think and feel that causes all our problems. Because the nature of the ego is simply like, whatever I'm feeling, I'm going to blame it on someone or something. Because that seems to make it like, if that someone or something goes away, then I won't have that anymore, right? But it's a complete illusion when we realize that two people can have a completely different reaction to the exact same thing, which is proven all the time, every day. And so it's obvious.
Yeah, we're creatures of habit.
We are choosing those responses. They are forcing us to think, my wife is good for nothing. She's inflexible. I can't stand this anymore. I put up with this for so long. And we will literally give away our soulmate. We will literally run away and abandon the people we love that we were supposed to be together with, because we're being controlled by these thought patterns that we've allowed to grow since we were children.
But I have always seen them as deeply unconscious, that I don't think people are completely aware of.
They're not. No,
the content of their thoughts or the impact.
No, they're not. They're not. And that's why the lessons, right? That's why I read them every day. And that's why I made them free online. That's why yoga is what we're not aware of is in complete control. And so, you know, there are methods out of this, right? So literally, we can plan to respond differently with that thing we know is going to trigger us. Like, if I know when my wife says this, that I'm going to blow my hat, so to speak, and say things I don't want to say that I'll never be able to take back, I can prepare for that. I can write down on a piece of paper and practice over and over how I'll respond differently. And in fact, that is the only way I've learned to get out of those habits. Because if I don't have something already prepared, that moment is too fast and way too powerful. Because I think it's me so angry. Because I think it's who I am and that I'm right in that moment that she's wrong. I don't see in that moment because I'm completely swept away by the the power of that emotion and those thoughts that have been there for so many years, how will I ever possibly see that, no, I'm being controlled by this old pattern that I've done over and over with my last three girlfriends and my mom and my sister? We have to prepare for those moments. And so hence the lessons, hence the reprogramming of our brain with different thoughts that come up in those moments. And that's what saved me when I got out of the car after hearing the officer say she's deceased. I had different thoughts available.
That's a powerful message, right? Is that if you take some of the energy that you're putting into thinking these devastating thoughts, mm-hmm. if you take some of that energy and just shift it into trying to be more aware of what's going on. And I mean, there's lots of different practices these days to do that. You're mentioning one, there's mindfulness, there's all kinds of practices. It's well worth it. It's well worth the energy, because then you can actually have legitimate control of stuff inside of you instead of feeling like you're at the mercy of everything and everyone around you.
Yeah. And you won't hurt the ones you love.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
When we don't understand this most basic stuff, life is so confusing.
And difficult.
Extremely difficult. Life takes courage. There's no doubt. And it will always take courage. I have nothing but compassion and empathy and deep admiration for every human being on this planet, from the ones I least agree with to the ones I most agree with. It takes freaking courage to be here.
It's a tough gig.
Tough gig is right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, from your gifts, from your practice, from your wife, you're giving this gift to the world of these free practices. Is that what you would call them, practices, or?
No, I would just call it, so there's two lessons, you know, there's 3 months of lessons. It's six lessons, so two each month. And I've also recorded them. I've written them in a way that is available both from a fifth grader up to an adult, because I taught fifth grade and I know how to talk to that age children and I know how receptive they are. They are simply kind of a lot of what we've talked about. So I open up by giving the tool delete and explaining how our hardwired thoughts, you know, and I don't talk about it from a yogic perspective. I talk about it from science. And this is hardwired neurons, and these are patterns, and we're going to respond this way until we make another groove. So it's just basically giving people different ways of looking at their own lives. And by listening to it over and over, it can replace the old mistaken ideas that come up and confuse us and get us to choose poorly in those moments when we need to choose well. And my experience is my own experience, which is simply that if we do this consistently, we can change those hardwired neurons paths within our brains, and we can be our best selves for the ones we love and for ourselves.
I love it.
It just takes a lot of work. We just have to consistently do it. It's like, it's so, to me, it was crazy. You know, there was this whole wave of like, no homework. There should be no homework in school. And to me, it was always like, wait a minute, that championship tennis player over there, he got that way by practice. And that championship golfer over there, she got that way by practice. And that amazing man over there who became president, the first black president or the first whatever president you want, became that way because they consistently practiced their craft and repeatedly worked at it and honed it. It's thousands and thousands and thousands of backhands and forehands and serves that refined that stroke. And to think that we're any different is a mistake. And it's a critical mistake. We need to do over and over and think over and over what we want in our lives for it to manifest. So let's be clear. And one of the things I make clear in the lessons is willpower doesn't just magically appear in us. And I teach this to children too. It is a muscle and it must be exercised to grow. And without willpower, nothing that you and I have been talking about for the last hour, Wendy, will matter at all. As long as it stays an intellectual concept, it does zero good. Knowledge is worth nothing unless it's practiced on a consistent basis. And I'm speaking, so I know I'm passionate here, but I'm telling everybody, this is from my own perspective. So like, if you go through this whole interview, realize that this is me like preaching to myself. Like, I need what I'm saying so badly every day. It's the truth. Life takes courage, Wendy. Every day.
Yes, it does. I think it's front and center right now, that statement on planet Earth. It's a really, everything's kind of bubbling up to the surface, and it's requiring a great deal of courage in a more conscious way. Yeah, right. So we're all in the same boat.
We are.
So on that note, I am very appreciative of you coming on the show and sharing all your wisdom with us. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you. You're so funny. Thank you for having me. And I'll share that I think, you know, podcasts like your own are what I just said in action. Like, people hear the words that come from you and the people you interview, and that's how they start replacing their old thoughts, right? They go, oh, that's really interesting. And then they pursue it, and then they read a book, and then they do a lesson, and that's how change happens. It happens with our thoughts. And so isn't that a podcast, right? We're listening to people's words. And so we can, those words that are profound are truths that are always true. And so they'll help anyone who resonates to them. And what's great is a podcast is like, I can choose not to believe what he said in that first part, but I kind of like that last thing. Like, there's no forcing to it. And I love that about learning too.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to include links to your website and your book in the show notes. And so what's the best way for people to get a hold of you if they wanted to find out more about what you're doing?
They could go to baronstefan.com, where they'll see the book. They'll see a link to the other website, The Yoga of Mindset, which has the lessons and the recordings. baronstefan.com also has a resource library menu on it of all the books, the audio, and the things that got me through those 13 days. So all that's there too, as well as photos of, you know, like 50 photos with quotes from the book of kind of those times in our lives that we went through.
With your lovely wife, yeah?
Yeah, my beauty.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Wendy. Thank you so much, truly.
I know I could probably benefit from exercising my willpower muscle when it comes to chocolate. Do I need chocolate every day? Yeah, yeah, I do. Now I think I'm supposed to say delete, right? If you'd like to learn more about Baron Stefan or access the free Yoga of Mindset lesson library, please visit his website, baronstefan.com. That's baronstefan.com. Thank you for listening. Thanks for letting your friends know about Lucid Cafe. Thanks for subscribing. And a big thank you to Barbara for her generous donation to the podcast. I'll be back in a few weeks with another thought-provoking episode. Until next time.